Hello and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint, the podcast highlighting and telling the stories of influential leaders in and around the sports industry. Today, we're excited to welcome our next guest, Gary Barnage, to the show. Gary is a former professional football player who is now running an incredible nonprofit, helping drive a humanitarian cause by building sports in different countries. Gary's journey starts in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where he would play his high school football and eventually end up taking his talents to the University of Louisville in 2004. His journey doesn't stop there. Gary was selected in the fifth round of the 2008 NFL draft by the Carolina Panthers. He'd go on to play with the Panthers for a few seasons before being traded to the Browns, where he would finish up his career. Gary's impact goes far beyond the football field. He is also the co-founder of his nonprofit, American Football Without Barriers, which is bringing the game that he loves to all corners of the world. Gary currently lives down in Jacksonville, Florida, but for the next 45 minutes, he's hanging out with us here on Checkpoint. Gary, my man, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Can't complain at all. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, man, we are thrilled to have you on. And, you know, for all you listeners tuning in for the first time, we're going to take the next 45 minutes and unpack Gary's journey. So from his youth, you know, in Kentucky through his rise with the NFL, and then, you know, start to unpack some of the amazing things that he's doing with the game that he loves, taking it all across the country. So we got a ton to unpack today, Gary. So we're going to hop right to it. Let's go back to your early days. When did you first pick up a football and realize, like, this is a game that I absolutely love?
Well, I think growing up, I grew up in Bowling Green, Kentucky. I was born there, lived in Kentucky for a few years. Then we moved to Louisiana, and then we moved to Florida. So we moved quite a bit. And I played baseball for most of my life. So baseball was my first sport I really got into. And then I think my sixth grade year, I decided I wanted to play football. So I played football my sixth grade year. I did like the Pop Warner type football. And then I didn't want to play again. I was like, I was good. I had fun with it. I wanted to play baseball and basketball. I wanted to focus on that. So I started playing basketball in seventh grade. And then eighth grade, I was missing it. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go back and play football. So I played football again in eighth grade. And I was like, that's not for me. I'm going to focus on baseball and basketball for high school. So I didn't play football in my ninth grade year. And then the coaches had came up to me because they were the same coaches I had for baseball. And they're like, hey, so why don't you come try out for football or whatever during the spring? And I'm like, I want to focus on baseball and basketball. But they convinced me, and I went and played football in spring. And then the rest is history. I played the rest of my high school career in football and then got a college scholarship and then made it to the NFL.
Man, I tell you, and you say that like that's a normal thing. I mean, you're in the 1% of the 1% that actually make it. And you know, one of the things that we've been going through and unpacking on Checkpoint are the transition moments, right? So, you know, going from high school to college, college to the pros, those are the details that not everybody understands. And so, you know, I'm curious, you know, in that recruiting journey from high school, did you have a lot of offers coming out, or, you know, what was that experience like for you when you selected Louisville?
So, yeah, I had quite a bit of offers. I had offers from like Rutgers, Cincinnati, Louisiana Lafayette, Florida, and Miami were interested. But the biggest thing with them is like I didn't want to go and sit on a bench for three years and redshirt and have to get a play for 1 year, maybe 2 years. I wanted to play right away. And Louisville gave me that opportunity to play as a true freshman. There was a senior and I got to play as a true freshman. So I got to play right away. And they were also the first school to actually start recruiting me. They started recruiting me after spring ball of my sophomore season, basically my freshman year. After my freshman year, towards the end of it, we had spring ball. So after my spring ball, I was starting getting recruited by Louisville because we had a tie between a former player that went to my high school, also went to Louisville and played tight end. So there was already a connection between the coaches. They already knew, hey, this is a guy who's just like a guy you already had. So there was a little bit of interaction there, so I was able to get started early with me, which was good because I actually felt a little bit of loyalty to them because of that aspect.
Man, loyalty is not a word that you hear usually when you talk about recruiting or NCAA football. So that's really interesting, right? You know, I went through the experience and actually had it on the complete opposite side, and so it's really neat to think that there's a lineage there, and we're, you know, Gary's going to come in and fill it. So now you show up on campus. You're starting at, you know, an FBS program, Power Five. What was that experience like, you know, mentality-wise? Were you able to adjust to it pretty quickly, you know, more speaking from the mental side, and then we'll go to the physical side on the field?
I think that's the biggest part. Like, for all, I was the first in my family to go to college. So I got a full ride. That was the first in my family to do that. So that was an honor in itself. And I knew that was the only way I was going to really have an opportunity to go to college in general. I have good grades, but I don't have grades to get a scholarship like that. So yeah. I knew I needed sports to do it. And I think once I got there, the biggest difference was like Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino, I give him so much credit. He gets so much crap because of off-field stuff, but he is an amazing coach. And everything I can do, I credit him for it, him and the coaching staff at Louisville when I was there, because they got the best out of you. They didn't want to recruit guys that were 5 stars and 4 stars. They didn't recruit those guys because they wanted guys that were going to come in and work. So they went after 2-star, 3-star guys and no star guys and say, hey, we're going to get the best out of these guys. They're going to work. We know they want to do it. And they weren't feeling entitled. And I think that's part of the strategy they had. They still had some big names. But for the most part, that our whole starting offense and defense weren't made of big names. They were guys that were going to come in and work. And for us, the biggest thing he tried to instill in us is you had to learn the playbook fast. So that's the biggest thing from high school to college is you have to know the playbook and you have to know stuff. But when you get into college, now you have meetings all the time. You're going over every little detail and you had to pick up on it within a week, because if you don't, there's somebody else and they'll take your spot. So you have to know everything right away. And I think that's the biggest transition from high school, because high school, you're the best on your team usually. So you're not worried about losing your position. Well, when you go to college, you're the best from your team. Everybody else on the team is the best from their team. So they can be just as good as you. You got to stand out above them, and you got to be able to pick up the offense or pick up the defense and know every detail. And you can't make mistakes, because when you make mistakes, that's when you get replaced.
That's exactly right. And you know, when we talk about what separates a high school athlete, a college athlete, a professional athlete, I mean, we're talking seconds, right? And that's all what the mental conditioning side of things. And mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when you were, you know, with Bobby at Louisville, did you guys focus on any of the mental health side of things, the mental conditioning? Was that part of the regiment there? Or when did you really start to become in tune to say, like, I got to program my mind just like I'm training my body?
Well, I think a lot of it was like he gave everybody a task. He says, whoever learns the playbook the quickest from the new guys, you're going to play. I don't care what you are. I don't care if you're a freshman, sophomore, whoever learns this playbook the quickest will play. And he put that on everybody. He wanted to see who was going to take that challenge and learn it to heart. And I learned the whole offense in a week and a half. That's not easy to do because he has a professional offense. It's just different. And it's different from everybody has a different terminologies and things come from high school. So you're trying to wipe all that away and learn something brand new. And then you have to be able to execute it and then still read the defense and all that kind of stuff. So I think he put that gauntlet out there and said, hey, learn this offense. We're going to do what we can do in meetings, but you got to do it on your own too. And I think that's part of it, while also balancing school. That's a whole nother aspect, because people forget you still have school in college. You still got to have good grades. You can't play. And hey, that's the hardest thing to balance is the two. But I think that's part of all the mental thing. And he's pushing you by learning the playbook, because like, okay, you're going to learn the playbook. You still got to have good grades. And that's one thing that they focused on. They wanted to have good athletes, but also good scholars.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's imperative, right? You're a student athlete. And correct. I think sometimes when you get to even the group of five, but then especially the power five, I think the coaches think, hey, you're an athlete student, even though what they tell you publicly is they're a student athlete. That's not always the narrative pitched inside. Now, I'm curious now going back, right? So I'm, you know, take your current knowledge that you have now and put yourself back at Louisville with name, image, and likeness on the horizon of really making an impact in the NCAA. Is there any advice that you would give to athletes that are coming through the system right now on how to balance your schedule or anything that worked for you that you would send back downstream, as there's going to be another element on the plate here soon?
I think most of it is you just got to focus on everything. Like, I know it's very broad, but you have to set goals. Like, you got to set goals for yourself. Hey, I got to make sure I do this in school first. Then I get to sports, whatever sport it is. And then you have to be able to balance. You get to find that balance. Everybody's going to have a different balance. Like for me, I'm a really good test taker. So I don't have to study as much for my test, because I retain the knowledge. That's why it helps me with playbooks and stuff. I retain the knowledge a little better. So it's a little different for me. Some guys need to study a long time. And then for plays, they might pick it up right away. But for schooling, it's different. Or it could be the opposite. and they could pick up schooling very easily, but plays are something they had to walk through. So you had to find a balance that works for you, because everybody's going to have different. If somebody tells you to do something, it might not work for you. You have to find what works for you, because you never know what it's going to be. It could be one little thing, could be different, but it makes tremendous difference for you.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the through line, Gary, as we're talking to influential leaders in sports. Balance seems to be one of the things that we're all trying to achieve. And sometimes when we get consumed in the vacuum of achieving greatness, winning a national championship, a Super Bowl, we tend to find ourselves off balance, right? We're pouring all of this energy into this one bucket. And so I think that's great advice. And it's easy for us to say now out of the fire, but it sounds, you know, going back downstream. So within that same tune, balance is something that is really difficult, especially as you climb the ranks, right? You get more demand on you with a single output. So talk to me, you know, a lot of people don't understand what that process is like as you're leaving college and embarking on the NFL. Put us in your mindset as you realized, hey, I have a real shot to go play ball. And then what that journey was like from that time to actually being drafted, you know, in 2008.
So obviously growing up, my dream was to make it professional in some sport. When I was younger, I didn't know what sport was going to be. And then when I got a college scholarship, like, okay, well, football is obviously going to have my opportunity. Now I got to make the most of it. And then I think towards the middle of my junior years when I started to realize I really have an opportunity to get to NFL, and I got to figure out what's the best route to do it. So for me, I took extra classes in the summer. I took extra classes so I could graduate early. I graduated in December instead of the spring, so I could train for the combine and the draft and all that kind of stuff, because I wanted to have no other worries to worry about besides football at that time. So I put sports on the back burners to get all my schooling done, to get it done early and get finished with it, so I could really focus on my senior year of football and then training for the draft. So that was a big thing for me, is I wanted to finish early, so there's more time to focus. So like my senior year, I didn't have heavy load of classes. I had a lighter load. So now more focus could go into sports, into football, and to achieving my dream. And then once I graduated in December, now it was full bore. I had 3-4 months straight of football training before the combine and all that kind of stuff and getting ready. And that's how I wanted to do it. And it was hard, because I had to take 16 credit hours in the summer. That's a lot of schooling over a 2-month period you have to take in and still do well. So, but that's one thing I wanted to put on my plate. I wanted to get this done because I wanted to focus on my opportunity to get to the NFL. And that mindset, it drove me and got me to where I am.
And I think you bring up mindset, and that's exactly it, right? Like, we see people get drafted. We see people make it to the league. We don't always understand, or I think maybe we do, but we take for granted the work that it took through the process to put yourself in that position to actually achieve that goal, right? It's not like you just show up and throw up. There was a strategic plan, a process for you to be able to go ahead and put your body, your mind at maximum velocity so you can, you know, go and achieve this NFL dream. Kudos to you. I think that is the unsung thing that people just take for granted. Really cool to hear that.
Well, real quick, one thing that I think a lot of people don't understand either is also for professional sports. Like for me, it was 7 years of straight working for football to achieve a dream I might not get. And that's the thing people take for granted. Yeah, these guys have the opportunity, but it takes 7 years in a row, 9 if you count the other 2 years I played football, 7 straight years of trying to get to one dream and trying to make it. And like you said, only the 1% of the 1% actually make it. So it's a very hard – so you also, that's why schooling is super important as well, because you have to have that fallback plan. Not every player that plays college football is going to make it to the NFL or even get the opportunity. That's why schooling is such a huge part of it as well. And you got to have a degree, and I think that's a huge part. That's why you see a lot of guys, when they make it, they leave early for the draft. They go back and get their degree because they know it's something that they need.
Exactly right. And now this is a question to you, because it's something that I've been trying to understand, the dichotomy of it, right? So I think that as we go through sports, it's becoming more imperative that we develop athletes holistically. So we develop them for, you know, to be maximizing on the field, but make sure that when they do hang up their cleats, that they're able to go ahead and transition into society in a more fluid way. Do you think after going through the gauntlet and making it all the way to the top, that that balance is going to be able to be achieved of personal growth and on the field growth? Or do you have to just devote all of your time during those years to just being a football player?
I think if you get to the, and it's not just football, if you make it to a professional in some sport, no matter what the sport is, I think during that time, you have to dedicate everything to it. Because it's a short career, especially NFL. That's the little saying is not for long. That's the saying. Average NFL career is 3 years. You don't even get vested till 3 years and one more game. So a lot of guys don't even get the retirement and the benefits because they don't make it long enough. So in football, just in football in general, you have to dedicate everything, because if you don't, you'll be out of the league. They'll get somebody that will. I think so. Football, it really takes a toll on you because you don't have the outside part of football. It's like you have to put things on the back burner because if you don't focus, then that's when your job's gone and you're no longer in the league and you're out after 3 years or out after a year, and that's not what you want. And it is difficult to do, but that's something I think you have to do in any professional. I think you have to dedicate it to it, especially because if you don't, you just won't stay around.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hardest code to crack there, right? Is like trying to achieve that balance while you're at your prime and build, you know, in today's world, a social platform or a nonprofit or, you know, something to fall back on and actually have real world experience to build on that education. I think a lot of people are trying to crack that code, and it's just always interesting hearing it from someone that's made it, because I think that perspective is so pure, where me, I only made it to the college level. I can only speculate at that point. So really interesting there. Now we're going to transition into your NFL days, because I think this is where I am just enamored with the journey. So talk to me. You land in Carolina, you get drafted in the fifth round. Talk to me about that first training camp. Was it just complete shell shock for you? How did you embrace that mentally when you showed up in the professional realm?
Well, I think for me, it was actually a blessing, because I actually grew up a Panther fan, just because my parents, they were Jaguar fans. So when both teams came in, we were living outside of Jacksonville and my parents were Jaguar fans. Obviously, as a younger kid, I'm not going to go with what my parents like. So I went with the Panthers. And then I also was a huge Julius Peppers fan growing up. I played defensive end and tight end, but defensive end, Julius Peppers was a dominated defensive end. So I watched him growing up, and the fact that I got to play with him on the Panthers was amazing. So I got to play with somebody I idolized growing up at defensive end. So I think that was an awestruck moment for myself. And then walking in as a rookie, and I see Julius Peppers squatting, I think like 525 pounds, like it was 200 pounds. I'm like, and I'm supposed to block this guy, right? Yeah. Good luck. But I think that's part of it. Like, you are going to be starstruck at first, or you're going to be awestruck because you're achieving your dream and you're playing with guys that you've watched your whole life. So that's part of it. But then once you get on the field, now they're just somebody you got to beat, because you got to keep your job. You got to play. Yeah. You want to be on the team. You want to make the team. So I think that your whole mindset changes at that point. You're like, okay, now let's go. Let's do the same thing I've done my whole life, and let's just keep going and get better. I think that's the biggest thing. And then especially for me, they already had two tight ends there. So I was the third tight end. I'm like, I want to be able to play. Obviously, I wasn't going to play right away at tight end, so I had to do it on special teams. So I went out and played all the special teams. And one of the seasons, I was actually our special teams leader in tackles. And so that – it's just something – it's the whole moniker is the more you can do. The more you can do, the longer you can stay around. I was our backup long snapper. If anything happened, I was, because I did it in high school. So you just, the more you can do, it helps you stay around, and then till you get your opportunity. Because I didn't truly get my opportunity until year eight, basically. So it took me 8 years to finally get my opportunity to start. So you never know. You just got to keep working. And that's the thing, is you never know when the opportunity is. It's the moment that you're going to get the opportunity. You have to achieve it, and you have to do the best you can with it and seize that moment. Because if you don't, they're like, okay, well, we gave him his moment and he wasn't ready. We're done with him.
Carpe diem, right? That's why you pour all that energy in. So when that moment does present itself, and I think you bring up a great point that this journey, even though it is short, it's a marathon, right? It's 8 years until you got that point. And so I think it's that when you talk about some of the transferable skill sets, like, it's the same as being in business. It's the same as running a family. Like, it's not like it just ends. You're continually compounding you know, process and good behavior. So when that time comes, you're ready to go, right? Like you can just turn it right on, which is really, it's just really cool. Now you beat me to my next question, but outside of Julius Peppers, is there anybody that you played with in your early days that stick out to you in that Panthers locker room that you know, maybe took you under their wing as a mentor or, you know, that really helped shape your professional football career?
Well, I wouldn't say as like a mentor. Obviously we work with the tight ends all the time. So I had Jeff King and Dante Rosario and they were more than helpful. Anything I needed, they helped me with. And they were the older guys. They were 2 years in and 3 years in and 2 years in, and I was the rookie. So they did everything they could to help. And I think that's one thing I try to instill whenever I had guys with me at tight end. I try to help them as much as I can because, hey, you're a group. You're best. You're as good as your whole group is. But I would say probably like all the old linemen we always had really good relationships with. I had a really good relationship with D'Angelo Williams. We always hung out and stuff like that. I would say like – in the realm of like a Julius Peppers, watching somebody and you're in awe of how they play would be Steve Smith. Seeing Steve Smith, everybody just thinks he's, oh, I'm the short guy. He's a short little guy. He can't play. And he just goes out there and just dominates week in, week out. And he's a whole nother player out there. And I think that's the thing you want to take parts of that, of his game, and you want to put that into your game. And I think that's part of my like the awestruck moment, just watching people play. That type of stuff was awesome. And then Jordan Groves at offensive tackle, watching him do it. And I got to play with Joe Thomas. So two probably future Hall of Famers. That was just a tremendous thing to see.
Yeah. How special, man. What a cool treat. And then before you parted ways with Carolina, Cam came on board, didn't he? Right.
So you got Cam. I had one season with Cam.
And I got to ask, did you catch a touchdown from Cam? Is there any moments with him that stick out?
I want to say I did, but I'm not sure. I want to say I had a touchdown on a Monday night game against the Eagles, but I don't know if it was from Cam or not. I don't remember if it was or not. I want to say I probably caught a touchdown from him, but I was also the second tight end at that time because Greg Olsen was on the team. So Greg Olsen was a starter, and I was the number two. And that was also part of the reason why I left Carolina to go to Cleveland because I wanted an opportunity to get a chance to start. And I knew I wasn't going to get that opportunity in Carolina because Greg Olsen's a great tight end. And I just knew I wouldn't get it unless he got hurt. And Greg Olsen was the Iron Man of tight end. He didn't come off the field. He didn't get hurt. So until towards late in his career, he never had injury issues. So I knew that wasn't going to be a great opportunity for me. That's why I also left Carolina, because I wanted the opportunity to get to play more.
Interesting. Yeah. And that guy's an iron tank. I mean, it is, he was incredible to watch. And so again, another transition in the career, you chase the ability to go ahead and start in Cleveland. If I recall correctly, you signed a pretty substantial contract in Cleveland. What was that experience like? Cause I also think, didn't you get an injury in Cleveland as well? Is that where you started to?
So I got hurt in Carolina my fourth season, my contract year. And then they signed me to a one-year deal, and that was when the lockout happened. So, and then they traded for Greg Olsen. So it was me, Greg Olsen, and Jeremy Shockey on the for 1 year. And then after the year, I got hurt. And then Greg Olsen was a starter, and I was the number two the following year. And then I went to Cleveland, and I went with Chudzinski, who was offense coordinator in Carolina. He got the head coach job in Cleveland. So I went to Cleveland, and when I went and visited, I was under the impression I was going to be like Greg Olsen, get the opportunity to start. Never came. They went with Jordan Cameron, who was already there. They gave him a start. Hey, credit to Jordan Cameron, great player. He got paid in Miami. He got paid in Cleveland. Good player. It was just under false representations the way they portrayed. That's why I went to Cleveland, because I was told one thing and another thing happened. But again, I'm just going to stick it out. I was a number two guy. That first year, I was the best pass blocking and blocking tight end in the NFL. I pass blocked more than any other tight end in the NFL. Never gave up a sack. So I did something to prove my point why I could play. So I did something that wasn't starting, but I was the number two guy. So I was going to take most of my opportunity and show what I could do. And then the following year, Jordan Cameron's playing. He got hurt. He got a concussion. So I actually got to play a little bit. I got some catches. I had a couple key catches that allowed us to win games. And then Jordan went to Miami. They let Jordan walk to go to Miami. And then I finally got an opportunity to start. And then that's when I had my Pro Bowl year. And then I signed a deal, a nice deal, for the next 3 years. And I only got to play one of those years because new coaching staff came in. They wanted to go a different route after one season. And that's just the nature of the business. they want their own guys. They don't really care about anything else. But that's when you learn. That's when I got sour on football, is the way the business side works. It takes away the fun of football.
I that's got to be the through line for every athlete I talk to. I love the game. How do you keep the game pure? But the business side just beats the absolute hell out of you, right? And you're constantly on edge. It's a toxic environment sometimes, the way that it's done. Hoping that there's some evolution in that, some transparency that breeds a more conducive environment for the athletes and the organizations as we continue to evolve the game that we love. Now, before we go into how you've taken this game and brought it all around the world, because I think that's an amazing legacy, a little birdie came down and told me that while you were in the NFL, dude, you were averaging drinking 8 to 12 Coca-Colas a day. You got to tell me about this.
Yeah, so I'm different than everybody else. So everything I'm about to say, nobody copy me, because it works for me. It does not work for other people. Yeah, I don't drink water. I hate water. I only drink it if I'm forced to. I need flavor. I can drink flavored water. I drink Gatorade, stuff like that. But I'm not a water drinker at all. And I drink it in practice because I had to. But for me, I'm also in the realm of, in the off season, I didn't work out all the time. Because to me, my body needed rest. My body needed to rest. So I would rest. I wouldn't do much in the off season. But now as soon as the season came and the training time in April or whatever, I'm full bore. You're going to get everything you got from me, and I'm going to get better. The first week I'm going to be hurting, but I'll put myself through that to take my rest and get my body ready. And I felt better in that way. Because you'll see some guys who take a month off and then they'll start training and then they'll get hurt. Sometime during OTAs or something, missed time. I didn't miss time because of injuries like that. I feel like that part of that's because I took time to let my body rest. And that's one thing you don't get enough of. You don't get enough of rest because you come back in April, you go till June, and you're going full bore. You're lifting all the time, 4 times a week. You're outside running around. And then you get like maybe 3 weeks off, 4 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, and then you go into training camp. So you don't get a lot of time to rest your body. So I took that whole time from whether if it was January to April, I took that time off. And that's when the nonprofit came in. I traveled and did all that kind of stuff because I like to see the world too. So I think for me, it's a whole different thing. But I've actually talked to nutritionists and stuff about it too. Like, we had a nutritionist and I was like, can you explain to me how, if you explain to me how this works, then I'll do everything you ask. And I was like, so when I was training for the combine, I cut out sugar. I cut out I ate the way you're supposed to. I didn't drink Coke, nothing. I cut out everything, was working out twice a day, like 3 times a week, all this kind of stuff. My speed, strength, everything stayed the same when I was doing what I wanted to do. So I was like, so what's my benefit? I did this for 3 months. What's the benefit that it's actually going to help me? And she says, if your body is used to this and doing fine, there's no reason to change. Don't fix what's not broken. And I never pulled muscles. I never cramped. So those are the big things that you get when you don't drink water, you cramp, or muscle injuries. I never had any soft tissue injuries. And I'm not flexible either. That's another thing. I'm not super flexible. But my body works different than other people's. So for me, it worked. Other people, it's not going to work. That's where I talk about you got to find what works for you. I knew my body needed rest. So for me, I rested. And water, just not for me.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I think, you know, my mind went right to like, I'm like talking to the John Daly of the NFL right now, right? Like, and it's like, if you find something that's non-traditional, but it works for you, and that's your process, well, the most important thing is being in tune with yourself. And so I think that's really interesting to hear where, hey, if you are going against the grain, but you're getting the results, double down on yourself, right? And you have to have, I mean, I imagine that takes a wealth of confidence, a wealth of like mental conditioning to say, like, you have everyone saying, Gary, what the hell are you doing? And it's like, yo, I know what I'm doing. Just back off and let me show you on the field. So really.
And that's the thing. It works. And like, I even tried to do things like, they're like, oh, I'm not flexible. So I tried stretching for like 6 months straight with the trainers and all that stuff. Never got more flexible. My body just said, no, it's not going to happen. So like, it's just things that my body is different than other people's. And that's just, but I also take it, some of it is I've never had a sip of alcohol in my life. So I think part of that too is like, I have that fighting against me because some people drink and that's fighting your body too. I've never had a sip. So I'll never have that issue in my body. But so mine is more of the Coke and stuff like that. But I also
Coca-Cola, that is.
Yes, Coca-Cola. But I also, like, during the season, I'll drink it, but I don't drink it as much as I would in the off season. I'll drink more Gatorades and stuff like that. So I'm still hydrating myself, but it's just not with water. It's just with, like, flavored water or Gatorade that has a little bit of sugar. It has flavor.
Interesting. Really cool. And I think there's so much to take from that for you listeners out there, where figure out what works for you. Because at the end of the day, if you have yourself right, then you can produce so much more. You can impact so much more. So become more in tune with yourself. And then I think once you have that right, then you can do, again, the world becomes your oyster.
And
so,
and just real quick, just to clarify, if you find what works for you, it also has to actually work. You can't say, oh, this works for me, and you're not producing, because then it doesn't work for you. That's the thing, is like you can't just say, oh, this works for me, but if you're not producing on the field or in the classroom or whatever it is, then it actually does not work. You have to find something that works for you while producing and doing things the right way. That's the biggest thing. And then you can find that actually works for you. There's a whole, it's not just, oh, this works for me and it's going to be good. It might work for you, but if you're not doing well, then it does not actually work. You need to change something.
And so on that point, this is really interesting. Like, if you do go off the beaten path, did you ever find yourself like, I have to measure up the same way as everybody that's like the 9 out of 10 that are doing it the traditional way. I have to measure up the same way and be at the same metrics as they are, even though I might be doing it a little bit different. Or did you feel like, hey, I'm out here on this island and maybe I get this mentality where it's like, I have my own version of success now?
No, I think for me, it's just like for me, I've always been like, oh, I've never had the 3 to 5% body fat. I'm fine with that. I'm completely content because I'm still doing the same weights these other guys are doing. I'm still running the same speed as these other guys. So for me, it works. And it doesn't matter if I'm not 8% body fat. If I'm 12, who cares? I'm still producing. And that's where a lot of that stuff gets taken out of context. Like the way people run, they judge the way people run. Oh, you're not athletic because of how you run. That's been my biggest thing, is like, I run awkwardly, but I ran a 4.5. Like, I might run awkward, but I'm going to run by you because you think I'm slow, which is fine. It works for me, but it does not work for scouts. Scouts see it a different way because they don't actually play the sport. So a lot of them have never played. They're just judged the way they see things. And that's not how things can be done. And that's the biggest thing. There's a lot of misconceptions with different things. Oh, if you don't have 8% body fat, you're not in shape. No, you can, because I can still do the same strength. Like for me, I have not worked out in probably 2.5 years. I could still probably go bench 325, no problem right now. And I haven't touched a weight in 3 years. My body is different. Everybody's different. And I think some coaches understand it. It's like one of the years in Cleveland, I had my coach that was my strength coach in Louisville. He came to Cleveland and was our strength coach. He knew how I was in Louisville. So I had a different type of workout issues than other guys do. So he knew how to handle that. Like he knew, okay, you don't have to do this. You can do this. We'll change this for you. We'll do this for you. Because he knows exactly how my body works from my college days. And that, and I had a great, I never got tired. I was great because of that. He knew how my body worked. He knew exactly what I needed. And he was willing to adjust to it. A lot of guys aren't willing to adjust to it when it comes to weights because they're like, oh, I know what's right. Well, you don't know what my body is, though. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And some guys, you're allowed to get away with it. Like Joe Thomas. He can do what he wanted because he's a Pro Bowler and he was great. He was one of the all-time best of all time, and he had a different workout than everybody else, but it worked for his body. But because he's a bigger name, they let him get away with it. Some younger guys, they won't. But again, it's a fine line because some younger guys will just cheat it, and then they got to make sure they're pushing them. That's where you got to find the guys that actually want to get better versus the guys are trying to like hide getting better. They're trying to hide. Oh, I don't want to work out. This doesn't work for my body. You got to try and figure that out. And that's also part of the coach's aspect. They got to figure that out. It's a whole different thing. But you also can tell that on the field and in practice on guys who want to do it by the way they go and the way they act. That's how you can tell all of it.
Film doesn't lie, does it, Gary?
Correct.
That eye in the sky is following you around. And, you know, I'm really interested. You know, we're going to transition here over into, you know, the nonprofit. But before I do, you know, on that point, we always talk about the intersection of sports and technology. And so, you know, with these, you know, more individualized programs, we're seeing that become more and more downstream. I'm curious, just through your lens, if we're able to go ahead and provide an athlete a regimented routine that is hyper customized to their body and what works for them, but we see them siloing off into a sport younger and younger and younger and not really playing baseball and football and soccer, et cetera. What are your thoughts and how do you balance that relationship between technology and sport?
Yeah. So when you're talking about sports in general, just playing one or not sport, I don't think any player should specialize in one sport at a younger age. I think just in general terms, every player should specialize in playing multiple sports because every sport's going to help you in every sport you play. Basketball is going to help you in football. Football is going to help you in baseball. Baseball is going to help you in basketball. Same for all of them, even soccer, track. All those help you in other sports in ways you just don't know at that time. But and I think with technology has been really good. And this is one thing I've really enjoyed now that I've been helping coach that we did not have. They have a huddle, which is a where you can watch the game film and you can see all the plays on offense and defense on your iPad or on your computer. And so the kids can see this at home. Like they don't have to, we don't have to do super long meetings. You can do a 30-minute meeting and they, okay, here, go watch this game film tonight. And then you can see if the guys are actually watching it. And that's also where you can see if the guys actually care about it as well. Hey, do your all your schoolwork. And then before you go to bed, just do about 20 minutes of watching this film or study the offense over the summer, stuff like that. Technology really helped in that aspect versus just having, here's a playbook, go home, and guys lose their playbook or leave their playbook at home. Now everybody's got computers for the most part. Everybody's got iPads or something like that, or a phone. You can even do huddle on your phone. Every kid has a phone, so they can always watch it at some point. And I think technology's really helped in that aspect, especially football-wise, because they can watch it at any time. If they're on the ride to the game or anywhere, if they're going on a vacation in the car, they can watch it if they want to. And they can learn the offense or learn the defense or see, okay, here's what we got, who's here we play, here's how I'd play last year or last game and figure out what to do better. I think that really helps because you have that in college and you have that in pro. And I think the fact that it's gotten to the high school level is awesome.
Yeah, that's a game changer. I mean, huddle is really doing some innovative things there. And, you know, the more we're able to get that at someone's fingertips, right? Like, I think, again, we'll go back to your word balance, mm-hmm. because you can become that much more consumed in it. So there's an education that says, hey, now that you have this, we have to engage with it responsibly. But man, the upside of it is tremendous, right? You can be that much bigger, faster, stronger, smarter because of some of these tools, which is really quite cool. So Gary, we're at the point of the conversation. I want to shift to what you're working on now, because I mean, this has been a heck of a ride from, you know, youth back in Bowling Green up through your playing days in the league. Let's go back to 2013. You cross paths with Breno. Is that, am I pronouncing that right?
Breno Giacomini. Yes. And Ahmed Abdallah.
And that is where American Football is Without Barriers is born. Take us on that journey. How did you guys come up with the idea and what is the concept behind it?
So Breno was actually my college roommate when we first got to Louisville. He came from Boston. I came from Florida. We both got recruited, and he actually played defensive line, and he got moved to tight end. So we were actually college roommates for 3 years. So it was natural for us. Hey, we're always together. We always do that kind of stuff. And then Ahmed Awadalo also went to college with us. So we had basketball class together and stuff like that. So Ahmed's from Egypt, and Ahmed is like, I want to do a football camp back home in Egypt. Well, Ahmed's like, to Breno, Breno's like, call Gary. Gary will do this automatically because they know I love Egyptian history. My bedroom's Egyptian theme. That's just something I love. I love the lore of Egypt and how there's so much unknown still. So for me, that was a no-brainer. So they call me. I said, yes, let's do this. Let's figure this out. Let's do a football camp over there. And then unfortunately, the revolution broke out over there. So we had to postpone. And instead of like just canceling and not doing it, I was like, so why don't we just make this a yearly trip? Why don't we go to a different country every year instead of just doing a one-off and be done? Let's go to a different country every year and try and spread the sport as far as we can, as much as we can, to all these different kids in different countries. So that's where American Football Without Barriers was born. In our first camp, we started in China. We went to China. Steve Smith came over with us. We had like 6 or 7 guys with us, and we did a camp there. And they only had, we had like 6 teams when we went there. Since we've left, they got like 15 now. So they've more than doubled how many kids were playing then. And that's one thing we're trying to do when we go to these countries. We want to teach the kids the sport the right way, the proper way, because we don't know how they're being taught, but what they see and what the coaches are teaching. So we teach them the proper way of tackling, head up and everything like that. We teach them about the fundamentals. We teach them about working out, teach them about taking care of their body, eating right. And because a lot of guys, they'll just play and then they'll practice. They won't even practice. They'll go work and then they'll go to a game and play, never do workouts, no nothing. So we have to teach them, hey, it's more than that. It's a lifestyle. You have to take care of your body to be able to play football without getting hurt. If you don't, you're going to get hurt. Football, you're going to get hurt no matter what. It's better whether it's going to be a serious injury or not, because you're taking care of your body. If you take care of your body, you'll be fine. You might roll an ankle or get a bruise or something like that, which is fine. But if you're taking care of your body, you'll be so much better. And that's what we want to teach. So we also bring a strength and conditioning coach. He teaches of the workout wise, what they can do. We do a Q&A where they can ask the players questions, schemes, whatever they want to know. And then we also talk about working out, the eating right, just taking care. And then we put that on the coaches. We have a coaches meeting with the coaches to say, hey, here's what you can do to help your kids. And then we want them to keep growing it. And then we try to give equipment, donate stuff. But then we also visit orphanages, hospitals outside of football, because we want to give back to the area that we visit. We want to, because there's so many people that they don't, like, nobody cares about some of these places. Nobody cares about doing anything for them. And we want to change that. We want them to have their moment when they get an opportunity to get this recognition, because some places they need this, like, and nobody's doing anything for them. So we want to give them that opportunity. And it's been tremendous. And it's also doing something that for guys back in the league that normally don't get to do. A lot of guys don't travel a ton. We're bringing them to different countries and we're opening their eyes to stuff outside of what the media says places are. Places are beautiful. And that's the thing, is like before we went to Turkey and Egypt, it was like, oh, don't go, it's not safe. That's all you ever hear in the media. We went to both those back-to-back years and had not one problem. And it was amazing. The guys loved it. And that's the thing, is we want to dispel some of the rumors that are out there about these countries, how they're not safe, they're super safe, and also help ties with the U.S. to other countries, because they have their opinion of us. We have our opinion of other countries. We want to dispel all that and say, hey, we're just normal people just like you. And then come interact with us, hang out with us, and then we're going to teach the sport and teach it the proper way of doing things.
Wow. I mean, we talk so much about legacy, and I think athletes use their platform to leave a legacy. This, my friend, has to be one of the coolest ways to leverage the game of football and use the platform that you and your other counterparts have, and take this and spread it to everybody. It's the most inclusive thing that I've heard. And, you know, I always found this interesting. We call ourselves world champions when you win the Super Bowl, yet no one else in the world really plays football like we do. So I think it's really quite cool to bridge that gap in a really organic way and bring this to other people, other societies, other civilizations that want to play, right? That take advantage of the same opportunities that you were given. Question for you.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. So I was going to say, you guys have been doing this for 7 years. We're going to touch on how you handled it with COVID. But is there one stop or one place where you guys went that really sticks out to you?
Probably Portugal. We went to Portugal and a bunch of kids were displaced by fires before we went, like a couple months before. They had a bunch of fires on the east side of Portugal. So we had some of the kids that were displaced come over to where we were, and we did a football camp just for them, like a miniature, smaller one football camp just for these kids. And I think it was just an amazing turnout. They had a great time. And then like 3 days after they went home, we got an email from them saying that they're going to start their own flag football league. So the fact that they weren't even playing the sport, we came and we taught them the sport basically from the ground up, just the bare minimum, and they want to start their own flag football after coming and do our camp. That's a tremendous honor for us to have, because we really impacted their lives that much. And also, since we've left Portugal, they're also going to have the first actual football stadium just for American football. It's not going to be soccer. They're not sharing it. It's going to be just American football. So the fact that we were able to help catapult that to the forefront is awesome. People would be surprised how big the sport is internationally. There is a bunch, like Brazil has like 30 teams that play. Finland has a Hall of Fame for Finland football that's been around since the 80s. So like people would never know this. Like Egypt has like 20 teams. They have flag football women's teams. Finland has tackle women's teams. Germany has tackle women's teams. Women, men, everywhere. And that's the thing. That's what's different about us. We actually have women in our camps. We put women with the men in the camp, and they have them competing because football is a universal sport. It doesn't matter age, sex, religion. Everybody can play it. It doesn't matter, and everybody can play it together. And that's what we're trying to teach and teach the proper way of doing it because everybody enjoys the sport, and we want to teach it the right way.
Wow. So let's talk real quick. You know, obviously COVID 2020 has thrown everybody through a loop. No one's exempt from it. How have you guys been handling and taking this obstacle head on and still pursuing and providing these opportunities, maybe in a virtual sense here?
So we were fortunate. We went to our camp in Hungary right before everything broke out. We got back right in the beginning of March. We were in Hungary in February, and we were fortunate. No, we had no issues over there. Everything was good, and it's unfortunate everything happened afterwards. And we haven't really been doing it. We're not going to be able to do a camp in 2021 internationally because most countries aren't allowing U.S. citizens to come right now. So our plan is we want to do a big camp in the U.S. We're thinking maybe in Georgia somewhere, and we're gonna do everything we need to do because of COVID, whether it be social distance and all that kind of stuff. But we want to still be able to have some kind of camp in 2021, and that's also giving it time. And then virtually wise, we're still willing to talk to coaches and do all that kind of stuff to help from the players aspect. Let the coaches talk to us. Any questions, whether it be health wise, if they want to work out wise, whether it be food, nutrition wise, we can help with all that kind of stuff. And I think that's one thing that the countries know. They can reach out to us about that stuff anytime they want. And we're willing to help them because we just want to see them succeed and help the kids more often. And we want to eventually get these kids an opportunity to get a college scholarship to play football here in the U.S. We've actually had one kid that was offered a D2 scholarship from China because we brought him over to DeAngelis camp in Memphis, and he turned it down because he wanted to go to Stanford for schooling. Completely fine, but he got an opportunity to maybe get a football scholarship to play in the U.S. And then we had a preferred walk-on at South Alabama from Egypt, a tight end from Egypt we brought over. So just the fact that these kids got these opportunities, they would never have got if we didn't do this. And that's one thing that's different from us. Like, we have no NFL backing. Like, the NFL doesn't help us. Everything's done by us ourselves because we want to go to countries that aren't just big markets. We want to go to countries to help. And NFL just wants to stay in the big markets, and that's not what it's about. It's about helping as many kids as possible anywhere that wants it. And that's one thing that we stand out with because we don't need the help. If the NFL doesn't want to help us and support, that's fine. We're still going to do it. We're going to help everybody we can because that's what it's all about. It's not just about money. It's not about anything because we don't make money off this. Everything we do is free. We don't charge for the camps. Nothing we do, we charge the kids. Everything is free. We give them shirts, everything. And that's the thing, is it's all about just giving back because we're in the position to give back. So why should we not?
Well, guys, success leaves clues. I promise that. If you pay attention to them, they're always out there. Gary, the way I define success is the ability to reach one and teach one. Man, you are reaching hundreds and thousands of people and you're elevating them. And so from me, thank you so much. It is such a pure representation of the game. Before we wind down, we have a couple of questions for you, but I want to plug it right now. If people want to learn more about American Football Without Barriers, or they want to get behind and donate, support the venture that you and the players are on, where can they get more information about that?
So afwbcamp.com. And then we also have AFWB Camps on Facebook as well.
Awesome. And we're going to post those links here so everybody can have direct access to those. Gary, I got to tell you, this has been an incredible conversation. You've dropped gems from your whole journey condensed into 45 minutes. As we wind down, I got a couple of things that personal side I want to ask you about. So first, you touched on it, but I'd be remiss without bringing up the King Tut bedroom. Talk to me about this thing. They say it's the coolest thing since sliced bread. What inspired it and what do you have in there?
Yeah, so I have everything. My dad was he was stationed in Egypt when he was in the Air Force. So I have pictures that he took when he was in the Air Force, and I think in the 70s. So I have those on the wall. I've been to Egypt twice. So I have a bunch of stuff I've bought there in Egypt, whether it be plates that were – my grandparents had plates that were made on the streets of Egypt that they gave me. I have pictures I've bought. I got a painting made with the pyramids, and I have a giant King Tut, like a sarcophagus that is actually like a bookcase, but it has my cologne in it and stuff like that. And then I have my walls are painted like a maroonish with a sand texture. So it feels like it's sand with gold trim. And then I just have everything all over the place. I have little swords, little knives that they have in Egypt. If you think about it, I have it probably in my room because Egyptian history is just amazing to me.
Man, we might have to, when we drop this, we might have to put the link in hieroglyphics or something, you know? I don't really
check it up. Hieroglyphics too.
Hey, there we go. Well, this is going to be the last question for you on a more serious note, but we've been asking all of our guests, excited to hear your answer. But if you could share, Gary, one thing that you've done in your life that you would recommend our guests do or experience in theirs, what would that be and why?
As in like what way? Pertains to what?
Just something
like,
that you've
somebody's been told to me to do or how I live my life or in general. I'll give you two things. How about that? I'll just give one of each. So
let's do it.
Number one, I would say never let anybody tell you can't do something. Because growing up, I was always told I was only good because I was tall. I wasn't good because of my skill, my ability. It was only because I was tall. So I used that as motivation to shut everybody up. And I think that really helped catapult me to where I was because I wanted to prove everybody wrong. So that saying is I live by that. Never let anybody tell you can't do something because you can if you really want to do it. And then my other thing would be travel more. I think too many people are too content staying in their hometown, staying in their home state, and not traveling and seeing the world. There's so much in this world to see that's so beautiful. Don't be scared by what you see in the media. Just do your own research. Don't just listen to what you hear. Do your own research and get a group. Go visit these countries. There's so much out there to see, and it's so beautiful. And I feel like I have friends that they don't even leave the state of Florida, and I don't understand that. It boggles my mind because there's just so much beauty out there to see. You should try to see it if you can. If you have any ability to see it, try to do as much as you can to see it because it's so worth it.
You get one shot at this life. You never know when it's going to be gone. Maximize every day. Gary Barnage, you embrace that, my man. This has been an absolute treat having you on the show. I know you gave a quick link where to find America Football Without Barriers, but if people want to follow your journey, where can they find you on social or get in touch with you?
So on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, it's all at Gary Barnage. Super simple, super easy. Also, I'm going to plug my podcast as well. Me and D'Angelo Williams, we have a Cinnamon and Sugar podcast that we do every Monday. And then also, I don't know if you know this, but October 14th, me and D'Angelo are on The Amazing Race. So we will be on The Amazing Race, and that airs October 14th.
I was just getting ready to plug it. You took my last sentence there, man. But we are excited to tune in, to continue to follow and watch your journey. Gary from Checkpoint and Scott Garber, man, this has been such a treat. Going to dangle the carrot. We're going to launch a subsequent series called Check In. So in 6 months, we're going to circle back with Gary just to see how things are going, especially in the face of this pandemic with his high school football team and all the other exciting things that he has going on. So Gary, thank you again for coming on. And until next time, listeners, be sure to check yourself. Gary, thanks again.